shell. It's got the words power and shell, thus it must be amazing. At least I think so. But today, fire off a git-awesome commandlet and join us. We're going to dig into the magical world of automation with the Windows Task Automation Framework. It's PowerShell. Everybody loves it. Join me. I'm Chris Wall, and perhaps we'll even find that weirdo Ethan Banks hiding among his Python scripts and Mac laptops. Welcome, listeners, to yet another fantastic episode of the Datanauts podcast. I'm here joined with my illustrious, snazzy-looking Mr. Sharpness co-host. How you doing, sir?
Snazzy-looking and sharp, which is odd coming from you considering we're not on video. You have no idea. I could be in my Yeti suit today, and you wouldn't know that. Actually, that might be one of the snazzier things in my closet.
Actually, now I want a photo of the Yeti suit. I just have that photo of you from Skype. You kind of have your head cupped in your hand. You've got your podcaster mic there, and you've got that Remington Steel look in your eyes. And, it inspires me every time. So today we're going to talk all about PowerShell. We're gonna PowerShell it up.
So I'm looking at this script that you wrote for this show, and it's like, all right, PowerShell scripting. And I'm coming from a point of utter ignorance, so because I am not a PowerShell user. So I'm actually very interested in the show. The scripting that I've done over the years has not been any OS specific. It's been generic stuff, Perl and Python, that sort of scripting. So I'm very keen to hear what PowerShell is all about.
Well, that's okay. We're not all perfect. Not all of us can love the PowerShell out of the gate. So hopefully we'll get you turned on to that. And as we talked about a little earlier, we'll introduce our guests, but apparently I'm the only person that uses Windows. I think I'm in a corner here. Everyone else is a Mac user. So again, not everyone can be perfect like me. So we have, first off, introduce Josh Atwell. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Chris, Ethan, thanks for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
And what have you been doing around PowerShell and your day job, in case people don't know who you are?
I'm a solutions architect for SolidFire, and PowerShell specific, we recently released a PowerShell module, and so I do a lot of work around that. I've also done a fair amount of work with PowerCLI and building power actions and contributing on GitHub, and also have contributed to a couple of books where PowerCLI and PowerShell have been involved.
Awesome. And then we also have another guest. I'm kind of shaking a little bit with excitement. This is like one of the world's most well-known automation gurus, Alan Renouf. Welcome to the Datanauts, my friend.
I was wondering who you're going to introduce then, because that definitely didn't sound like me. I'm like, who else is here? Who are we looking forward to? Come on.
Name came up early. I mean, when I was first learning PowerCLI and the VCheck and all those other things that I would love for you to tell the audience about, but you've been an inspiration for many, many years. So tell us a little bit about who you are for those that don't know.
I'm Alan Renouf. I am a product line manager at VMware, and I basically product manage the PowerCLI product here, among other things.
Yeah, PowerCLI. We'll go into that definitely further down the line, but you're being a little humble. I mean, I think most every VMware administrator in the world has either heard of or runs the VCheck, a project, I guess you could call it. Can you just give us a little bit about what that was?
Sure. So the quick answer is, so every vSphere admin out there has their day-to-day problems. And when I was working as a customer, we also had day-to-day problems, the kind of stuff that you would go in and check your infrastructure for, like a tick list, right? You know, are my data stores going to run out of space? Do I have VMs with snapshots over a certain amount of days old? And if you're a vSphere admin, you'll know about these issues. But we had a list of maybe 20 things that we would go in and check. And so we decided, rather than actually going through this Excel spreadsheet and ticking them every day and storing it off, why don't we script this stuff and get the computers to check it for us? So we did that, and we wrote a script called VCheck. I released it on my website. Other people started using it. I then released it into GitHub, and now there's hundreds of people contributing to it, and we have hundreds and hundreds of plugins that go out there and check for a number of different problems that you might encounter in your data center and give you a nice report at the end of the day that says, hey, here's what you're going into. It's the kind of thing that you would run as a scheduled task in the morning, so that if you're sad like me, you can check your email at, you know, 6 o'clock while you're eating your breakfast and go, okay, what am I walking into today? What issues am I going to walk into?
Absolutely. Even in the channel too, I found it very helpful for doing kind of health checks and just validating that the environment was as it should be. And it's a great project. I just felt like it needed a little bit more of attention there, and certainly has been around for quite some time. The first place I wanted to start off with this show was kind of an introduction to PowerShell. especially as we have folks that may not be all that heavily into Windows. You might not have heard it. You might be like Mr. Ethan Banks here. It's just this thing you've heard of that you've not encountered too much. So I pulled up the cheese mode definition from Wikipedia about PowerShell, and it gives the very sterile answer as to what it is that it's task automation and configuration management framework from Microsoft. And in my words, it was always the command line shell that doesn't suck, because we always had to rely on some other methods to automate those. And in fact, it was interesting to see that PowerShell turned 9 years old back in November. This is being recorded in December, so just a month ago, it hit 9 years old. So it's almost double digits in age. Time flies. I remember when it was just Monad Shell and came out. You're both well known for being people that work with PowerShell and various modules, creation, whatnot. So, Alan, when did you get started with PowerShell, and what was the trigger that encouraged you to start working with it?
I started with PowerShell. I was actually working as a contractor. I went into this one place, and they gave me this task to do. You know how the contractors kind of, the consultants get these things where they say, okay, here's your task for today. We need you to go into the virtual infrastructure server. We have folders set up for the 50 projects that we've got going at the moment. And in those 50 projects, there's a bunch of virtual machines. And the virtual machine owners don't actually know what the configuration of those virtual machines are at the moment. So we want you to write that information down, go to each of these virtual machines, write that information down, and then email it to the project owners so they know exactly what resources they're using and how their VMs are configured. So like any good admin, I went in and I did that and did it for the first couple of VMs and then thought, screw this, there's got to be a better way to do it. So I looked at how to extract information from vSphere, and it sounds like a very simple thing, right? Surely there's some file export menu thing that we can go to, but no, there isn't. So I had a look around, and you know, I'm definitely not a programmer. I certainly wasn't a programmer in them days, and I still claim that I'm not a programmer right now. So I looked for the different options that I had, and the first thing I actually found was the Perl SDK. I downloaded that, got it installed, loaded it up, took a look at some code, got very, very scared and ran away fast. if you've ever looked at Perl code before, you know, certainly as an administrator, it scares the crap out of you, and it's not easy. I looked for other options, and at the time there was this beta out of something called the VI toolkit, virtual infrastructure toolkit. I looked at that and I saw a command there called get VM, and I was like, oh, you know, even I understand that. I downloaded the VI toolkit, hooked it into my infrastructure, ran get VM, and guess what? It had all the information that I needed. That's really what got me into PowerShell. I kind of came through the VI toolkit, which obviously later evolved to be PowerCLI. And I ran my first command against the infrastructure to export the information into an Excel spreadsheet and send it to the project owners, wrote my first line of code, and then was hooked. From then on afterwards, I found more and more reasons to use PowerCLI and less reasons to use the UI. My career progressed from there.
Now, you were using PowerShell for a VMware specific application. So I had always thought that PowerShell was tied to Windows as such. What am I missing here?
No, you're absolutely right. And I didn't even know that when I first started out. I mean, I'd never heard of PowerShell. I was just after a way to solve the job that I needed to do, right? So I came across this thing called VI Toolkit, which was, came to be PowerCLI. And you're absolutely right. I mean, PowerCLI is basically a bunch of commands that gets added into PowerShell for you to manage your VMware environment. That's all it is. It's a way for us to extend the awesome stuff that they'd put in Windows PowerShell so that you can make it even more awesome and manage VMware environments.
So I guess that lends credibility to the Wikipedia definition of calling PowerShell a framework because it is extensible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the one thing that I think that Wikipedia is missing is the fact that it's fundamentally different to most other programming languages in that it's designed towards the system administrator. So it's, you know, it's actually made simpler and made easier for the system admin to use. Most people are scared by the Pythons or the Perls or the Rubies or the C-sharps of this world. You know, because we're not developers, and when we start talking developer languages and start talking about that kind of stuff, it just blows your mind and you get a little bit scared, to be honest, because you have to learn a whole bunch of programming specifics. Whereas PowerShell, I think, has that right mix of you need to know a little bit about how it works, but you can pick that stuff up very quickly And pretty much anyone can pick up a PowerShell script or a Power CLI script and read it like it's English.
It is very human readable. I definitely can agree with when I started learning PowerShell, how it felt like I was just kind of having a conversation almost, you know, versus the prior language I had been working with was JavaScript. And before that was COBOL, which is probably one of the most anal languages I've ever had to play with, where, you know, the period's in the wrong spot. The compiler doesn't work.
Right.
So it is rather simple to get started with.
Yeah.
Josh, what about you? What was your kind of aha moment where PowerShell felt like the right answer and kind of triggered you to start going down that path?
Yeah, well, Alan makes me feel like a bit of a PowerShell graybeard all of a sudden, because I started with PowerShell right before Exchange 2007. We were scoping out our Exchange 2007 upgrade, and a lot of the tasks that were required with the configuration and management were they required PowerShell. You had to write or run PowerShell commands in order to execute those things. They weren't part of the GUI. There was no other way of doing it. Like, you had to know PowerShell. So in the process of investigating what we were going to do with that upgrade, I kind of got started with PowerShell. I had seen the Monad a little bit, and I had tried it out to see if I could replace some of the other tasks that I had automated in our environment. And at the time, I didn't appreciate the power of PowerShell. And so I didn't use it that early on. But once we started using it for Exchange 2007, I started seeing some of the other capabilities. I started exploring a little bit more of the command lists that were available. And then, you know, like Alan, I found the VI toolkit, and I started automating, you know, a lot of the stuff that I was doing in our VMware environment, because at the time, Virtual Center Server, this was like 2.5 timeframe, didn't have the same robustness of tools and capabilities. You know, it wasn't as easy as it is today. And so trying to go in and automate and report and get information kind of became part of my daily life, led me to multiple different jobs. And multiple times I automated myself out of a job, basically, which isn't a bad thing necessarily. But PowerShell and I have had a long, long history.
Why PowerShell, though, as opposed to all these other languages that are out there, some of which we've mentioned? And I know, you know, you can argue, yes, if for a non-programmer, some of this Perl and so on can be intimidating. But, you know, what does PowerShell do that you can't do with things like Batch or JavaScript, Python?
A couple of things that, you know, strike me, first of all, is the ease of use. Like I said before, you know, you don't have to be a programmer to learn this stuff. You can pick it up, you can run a few commands, you can do some stuff, and it pretty much protects you against everything that you want to do that's going to be wrong. It gives you warnings, it gives you what ifs, it's enables you to do that kind of stuff. The second thing I would say is the integration. You know, you mentioned the framework. The amount of companies out there now that have snap-ins or have modules and extend PowerShell to work with their product, you can kind of do cross-product workflows and get products to work together in ways that they were never designed to do. You know, you can go all the way from building out an array, you know, a NetApp, an EMC, a SolidFire array, to actually building up your whole VMware environment and setting it all up, building your virtual machines, reaching inside of those, running some commands in Windows or Linux to do some application configuration, building a cloud. You can go from zero to hero in one script.
I run a Mac. Can I run PowerShell on my Mac, or do I have to have a Windows environment in which to run PowerShell?
Well, you know, VMware has this great product called Fusion.
Okay, you're answering the question. I run Fusion. I got to fire up a Windows VM. Fair enough, fair enough.
It is only a Windows scripting language at the moment. You can't install it on the Mac at the moment. But, you know, a couple of the things that Microsoft have done recently, which I find interesting, and obviously, you know, there's no commitment here from them as to where they're going with this stuff, but they have actually open sourced .NET, or a version of .NET called .NET Core. And PowerShell is based off of .NET. And with the open sourcing, people have actually taken it and made it work on Linux. And, you know, I'm sure there's people out there that have got it to work on Mac as well. So you can kind of imagine a future where maybe they could get PowerShell to run on a Linux machine or a Mac, and actually bring some of that goodness over to the shell.
Yeah, I think Alan touched on something that's really important to your question, Ethan, is that PowerShell is built and based on the .NET framework. And if you've ever programmed against the .NET framework, there's parts of it that are really nice in the fact that there's so much capability kind of built into the object structure And PowerShell, you know, natively includes that. So when you do something like a git-vm or git-service, what's returned looks like a list of things, but each item in that list is actually an object. And that object includes tons of methods and members and pieces of information that, you know, are about that object. It also allows you to do manipulations and pull the information that you need, pass that information on. So that object-oriented state that is native to it is wildly powerful.
Absolutely. I would say that's like one of the biggest learning curves. You know, that moment where I understood what object-orientated meant in a PowerShell context, that's when I was hooked on PowerShell. And I was like, oh, it does all this stuff. And I didn't even realize.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you run git VM, you get a few bits of information back and you're like, okay, well, it's like I'm running DOS. When realistically, the information that you're seeing on the screen is not the entire information that's being returned. And as soon as you find out how to use that information and explore that information and work with objects, that's when you're hooked. That's when you're like, oh, this is totally different to all the other languages, all the other scripting that I've done before.
What about a baseline question that seems to come up? Maybe you can help add some clarity around what is the difference between just a general script versus a commandlet, and even contrast that to a module within PowerShell. What is a script, commandlet, and a module, and what are their differences within PowerShell?
Let's start at the beginning, okay? So we've already talked about commandlets, which are basically commands that come with PowerShell and can be extended by other companies like SolidFire, VMware. So you have commandlets like getvm, for example. So then the next thing I would say is a function. You didn't mention those specifically, but a function is basically a way to describe a bunch of commands that you want to run at the same time. So what you can do is you can say, okay, I'm gonna create a new function called chriswall. And when I run chriswall, I actually want it to run all these separate commands and then give me an output. So you've got commandlets, you've got functions, and then normally these things are stored in a script. And a script is normally it's created with a PS1 extension, which is a PowerShell script extension. And that script would contain both functions and commandlets, or maybe it would just be a bunch of commandlets that would run in a specific order. And really your scripts are more task orientated. So I don't want to just create a virtual machine, but I want to create a virtual machine and then I want to go and change its network and then I want to go and add a disk and then I want to go inside that virtual machine and do something else. So once you've done your complete task from start to end, you would save that inside of a script and then you would run that to achieve that task.
With functions and with commandlets, right, there's that input-output mechanism. Put in data, it spits something out. And when you get to a point where you have perhaps like multiple functions that you've developed, and these functions will leverage different commandlets inside of them, they're more robust than a simple script because they're reusable, right? Because you'll pass in information through parameters. You then take all those functions and you combine them together into a single file or a single component called a module. And what that allows you to do is to be able to import that and transfer that between sessions or between systems, and it'll include all the functions. I tend to try to write everything I do in functions so that I make it easier for people to consume, you know, the work that I've done. And when I get a collection of things that kind of make sense together, I group them into modules, because then you can put like a manifest in front of it that can, you can version control it. You can provide some additional guidance and information. You can kind of simplify how people load that code into your session. Modules and functions, you know, behave very much like you would with like PowerCLI or with, you know, for instance, a SolidFire module or something like that, in that it's a very common, consistent framework for bringing in additional capabilities into your session.
Chris, listening back to this intro of PowerShell, I thought it was an interesting point that Perl and other general purpose languages can be pretty intimidating for non-programmers. And that was kind of a revelation for me. I hadn't really thought about it. I have a computer science degree. I've been working with, you know, variables and iteration structures and so on for a long time. And every programming language is kind of the same. in that sense. You just got to get into the syntax and figure out what the specialties are about this language that makes it unique and interesting and valuable for whatever the use case is. So I'd never really thought of it as too much of a learning curve, when in fact it is. And here comes PowerShell. It's meant to be human readable and accessible for system administrators. And so I think that's a pretty strong point in its favor.
Absolutely. I mean, the lowest bar to adoption is typically what's going to win, right? If we have to spend any extra effort on something, if item A takes extra effort and item B does not, and they both accomplish the same kind of thing, you're going to go with whatever is typically easier. And I think that plays into another point that was made around vendor integration, meaning there's already all these associated modules and all this work that's been done for you. And PowerShell is a framework where you can just plug in these extensible modules that add functionality without having to write them. Because realistically, if we can just get off the ground and start doing valuable work, that's going to be a much easier way of adoption and a much more valuable method of adoption than having to write all this custom stuff. You know, somebody else has already done it for you. So I like that.
Hi, everybody. We'll get back to the podcast in just a minute, but I want to thank today's sponsor, ThousandEyes. As your network expands to include cloud services, ISPs, and third-party providers, visibility diminishes, which is a huge problem when you're running critical applications, websites, and services. That's where ThousandEyes comes in. ThousandEyes gives you visibility into every network your company relies on. Your corporate network, the internet, cloud service provider network, all from one place. Cloud agents are deployed in locations all across the globe, and enterprise agents provide additional visibility from within your own network. Together, these vantage points provide the most complete understanding of network topology, dependencies, and behavior. With ThousandEyes, you can piece together multiple layers of network insight, from BGP routing and DNS to web server and layer 3 performance. You can quickly and precisely pinpoint the root cause of problems, such as device faults, congestion, DDoS attacks, and more. You can share data and insights with vendors and customers to resolve problems faster. And here's a special offer just for listeners. Sign up for a free account at ThousandEyes.com/packetpushers and choose a free ThousandEyes t-shirt. Start seeing your network like you've never seen it before. ThousandEyes, it's network intelligence you can see. And now back to the podcast.
Alan, when you introduced yourself, it came up that you had been involved with PowerCLI, VMware's set of commandlets for PowerShell. And, you know, initially you were an enthusiast, now you're working for VMware. I want to dive into that a little bit more. Help us understand PowerCLI in more detail.
Sure. PowerCLI, like I said, is VMware's way to extend PowerShell. So we enable you to manage VMware environments. So we have a bunch of these modules to extend the PowerShell core commands to work with VMware. And these modules that we have allow you to manage things like Virtual Center, ESX, Image Builder, even vCloud Air, vCloud Director, Horizon Mirage, Horizon View, Site Recovery Manager, vRealize Operations Manager, Update Manager, vSAN, and Auto Deploy. So a lot of the core products and the core features that come from VMware, PowerCLI enables you to actually manage those, integrate those, write scripts, and automate those products.
So effectively, I'm getting, again, modules, meaning I got a whole bunch more commands and objects that I can now act upon within my familiar PowerShell world. I've just got new commands that let me do things like authenticate to vCenter, and then in that context, query this whole series of objects and pull in this data and so on.
Exactly right. The great thing that we haven't mentioned yet about PowerShell is how self-discoverable it is as well. So once you learn a few basics about PowerShell, like how to get a list of commands and then how to get help on those commands, you can pretty much work your way through any product. In fact, one of the things I do to work out, like if a new product comes on the market and it's got a PowerShell module, I'll actually look at the code and I'll, you know, mess around with their module because it helps me understand their product and the way it works a lot more than it would do if I went into the UI, which kind of adds that surface on top that what you're doing over the top is not necessarily what the product is doing underneath. So, you know, with PowerShell and PowerCLI, one of the great things that's there is that the help files actually include examples most of the time. So if I do a get help on a commander, I can actually do a minus examples. If I do, you know, new VM, for example, it actually gives me 20 versions of a command I could run that will give me a new virtual machine based upon different scenarios, you know, putting it on a data center, putting it in a host, creating a storage profile, all this kind of stuff. And it's great to be able to take that, copy that example into a script editor, and then modify it to meet your needs.
So you kind of led into another question that I had about this. So PowerCLI or PowerShell in general, I'm not just reading information and, you know, writing reports. I'm actually doing things. I'm configuring something in my VMware world if I'm using PowerCLI. You mentioned, you know, standing up a new VM. What other kinds of things could I do with PowerCLI?
Yeah, that's, and the reason I, you know, we normally start with reports is that PowerShell itself has the naming convention of verb dash noun. So the verbs are things like get or new or set. And where people normally start is with the get commands, because you've got to imagine people see this PowerCLI and they see it doing wonderful things against your infrastructure, but it could very easily remove everything that's in your infrastructure as well. People get scared, first of all, that they're going to create this resume generating event, right? So they start with the get commands, because the get commands are safe. They're the ones that just get information and report information. And then I generally see people move on to the news and the sets and the updates or the invokes and work with those commandlets. And that's really where you can start doing automation rather than just reporting. So creating new virtual machines, configuring your environment from start to end, deploying new environments, really it's down to your imagination as to what you want to automate. You can pretty much do it.
Yeah, it's funny. I am a guy that spent a lot of time at an F5 application delivery controller console. You only go through those screens of click, 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 click 18,000 times to stand up a load balancing environment before you get real familiar with the command line that F5 offers you and start writing some scripts to automate that process.
And that's what I tell people about our hardening guide as well. You know, something as vital as security hardening a virtual machine, you might have a document that you go through maybe the first time or the second time or the third time, and you security harden the virtual machine that you create. But what happens is the third time or the fourth time that the admin has to go through that, they're like, oh, I'm an expert. I know how to harden a virtual machine, and they'll miss something. And that's really when things go wrong, because somebody hacks that virtual machine and you've lost a lot of money. And that's when you get the newspaper articles about companies that have allowed security hacks to go inside their machines. So, you know, that aspect of being able to automate this stuff and automate the hardening of a virtual machine means that the admin won't forget it. Maybe they run the script, or what's even better is that you set a task up that says, when a virtual machine's created, run this script that actually hardens my virtual machine. You've taken that task away from the admin. You've removed the human error aspect of it, and you've made sure that you're consistently applying that hardening guide to your virtual machines every time.
And I think it's a good point to abstract and make sure everyone listening understands that PowerCLI isn't kind of its own entity. It's an extension to the framework of PowerShell that specifically adds a lot of functionality for the VMware environment, for vSphere environment and the ancillary products, without having to go reinvent the wheel. You know, you're not having to write all of the code to talk to the vSphere APIs by yourself. You're taking advantage of modules that have been baked and tested and thought about by the engineers at VMware. You're incorporating it into a framework that's already pretty darn easy to consume as an admin or an engineer. And you're leveraging that to make that nice and consistent. I always like to be the lazy admin, right? So I find anything I can automate is always a great thing, because A, I'm lazy, I don't want to do it. But B, I'm also forgetful, because I'm a slovenly human and we tend to forget to click things. So if I can abstract that best practice or that really good technique into a script and make sure that it's runnable every time, there's two benefits. One, I don't forget. And two, I can delegate it to somebody else. Yes. So those are two things I really like about working with PowerCLI.
That's true. And you always get the people that say, you know, well, I get it. I understand PowerShell. I understand PowerCLI. But I just don't have time to learn that stuff. That's the number one thing I hear from people. And, you know, my answer to them is always think about the time that it saves you. You know, you spend a lot of your time doing the menial tasks at the moment through the UI. If you could actually just script some of those, yeah, you know, the first time you do that, it's going to be hard. You need to learn some new stuff. And if you don't want to learn new stuff, then you're in the wrong job. But if you do want to learn new stuff, then learn how to do that first task in PowerShell. And then the next time you do it, you just run that script. And you've also got that little bit of knowledge, because when you want to automate the next thing, it will take you less time to write the script and you'll save even more time. You know, I was one of those people that was like, I don't have time to learn this stuff. But once you actually start learning it and you start scripting stuff, you realize how much time you get back and how much time you have to spend on more interesting things.
The way I've heard it described is if you don't have time to learn it, you don't have time not to learn it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's like, do you want to walk everywhere or do you want to take the time to learn to drive a car and go 60 miles an hour instead of 3 miles an hour? There's an investment there, but once you've learned that skill, you're going to go so exponentially faster that it eats away at that time difference very quickly.
That's a good analogy. I like that one. I'll use that one.
So the other thing I came to mind, Josh, you were talking about at SolidFire, you created a module. It sounds like to abstract away some of the RESTful API calls that are needed to talk to your product with PowerShell. Tell me about that project, why you did it, what it was like going through and building the PowerShell modules and that experience.
Yeah, when I joined SolidFire, I was pretty transparent that my general interest in storage was pretty low, which was interesting for someone going to a storage company. However, the infrastructure is built with a full-featured API on the front end, which means that you can programmatically do anything that you want to do by just making a REST call. And that naturally led me to say, well, I mean, if I can do it with a REST call, then I need to be able to do it with PowerShell. So the project kind of started out with just me sitting in front of my laptop with a bottle of bourbon and some invoke REST method over a couple of weekends to just prove out the capability to kind of help our lab team and my team perform some basic tasks a little more quickly. I quickly got to a little over 20 functions because at that time they weren't compiled binaries or true commandlets. They were just really advanced functions. But, the amount of testing I had done was relatively small. There were parameters that still weren't available. And at which point I started outsourcing some of the work and started expanding it, getting it turned into a, full compiled module. And then before too long, it got brought back in house and they really just ran wild with it. We got an engineer here, a guy named Adam, who is just an absolute PowerShell machine now. He's cranking out commandlets like crazy. We're looking at quarterly release updates. We went 1.0, I think it was the 30th of September, maybe like October 1st, right at the beginning of the fourth quarter. We've got 1.1 about to release. We're already got 1.2, hopping, and we're adding additional features. The processes, it can be challenging, right? Because you have to think about how people are going to use it. And I was quickly finding that, the way I used it and the way other people were using it was a lot more advanced than what I was able to code. And there's definitely a tipping point in that development cycle. So it was challenging. And it can get kind of daunting when you're trying to boil the ocean, if you will.
Josh, the abstraction that you wrote, PowerShell is effectively doing REST API calls still?
No, I mean, it has a commandlet called invoke REST method. I think there's an invoke web request as well. So they have multiple commandlets that will allow you to send the REST call, right? And so SolidFire is JSON RPC. So I'd send a post call with invoke REST method, and then I would take the JSON return and I would parse it. And since the JSON return is returning as an object, I essentially would just dive into the part of the object that was necessary, define it as an object type, and then spit it out as an object back into the session. And so I was simply leveraging an existing commandlet. In fact, Chris, I've seen him do the exact same thing with Rubrik, right? Being able to go in and invoke a REST call to the target and be able to get that response and be able to execute something.
As a PowerShell user, I don't even need to know that you're doing that stuff. I just load up the module and, run my normal PowerShell commands.
Yeah, that's right. So with the initial build that I had done, the way it would work is, it was just a series of functions. So you would just dot source or, load in the function into your session. And, in the scope of SolidFire, I would say, get SF volumes, for SF or SolidFire so that we don't overlap with other commandlets or functions, and it would return the volume information. And so from a user's perspective, it was no different than what they would expect from using a commandlet from Power CLI or a commandlet from Microsoft. aside from the lack of testing and validation on certain components. Now, you know, we're a fully compiled, we have full testing that's done on all the commandlets. But the interesting thing is the scripts that I wrote with the initial module that I started with and the ones that we have today are not vastly different. The only thing that changed was maybe some parameter names because we wanted to improve the usability. And that was pretty much it. The amount of change that I had to have was very, very light because we're basically making the exact same call and we're using the exact same limitations of the API, you know, based on like if you're setting like a target or initiator secret, it needs to be between 12 and 16 characters. Well, that's the same whether or not you're doing it with PowerShell, whether or not you're doing it with Python, Java, it doesn't matter, right? It's the same limitations that's based on the API. And so the usability and the way the user experience works as we've progressed has been consistent. And, you know, Alan makes a great point about learning and help. There were very few people at SolidFire that used PowerShell prior to recently, obviously, because we didn't have much. But now I've got people all over the organization who are using it, and they're just like, man, I can't believe how easy it is to get started with PowerShell and to use PowerShell against our platform. Like, we've had lots of great ways of doing some of this stuff, but man, this is just super simple to get started.
We talked about it in the other break that PowerShell's one of its huge advantages is that it's a framework and it's very pluggable. But I also like that we talked about calling RESTful APIs within PowerShell. And this is something I've done myself. I've written quite a bit about abstracting away a RESTful API endpoint and the various methods and endpoints that you're talking to within PowerShell. But if you think about it, if I can do that abstraction in a script and something that's really easy to do, and make it so incredibly simple that I can delegate it to someone else or to a lower tier personnel, there is value there, right? That means that I can encapsulate somewhat tricky type commands, you know, talking to an API and how that's going to all work and the order that it's going to talk and all that kind of jazz, into something that someone else can just kind of double click. And I think there's some value there with PowerShell. Ethan, where's your head at?
You segued perfectly into my thoughts here. The point came up that consistency is enforced when running a script. You're going to get a predictable result every time you run a script that does the same thing over and over versus being a human being who's just maybe looking at a blog post that explained on your internal wiki how to do something. Or if you just, I'm an awesome engineer, I know how to do this, and then you just kind of riff. But inevitably, if you're a human being, you'll overlook something in that procedure, or in riffing, you'll forget something because you're awesome. How could you possibly forget something? You will. If you run a script, you get that consistent result every single time. And then, yeah, like you said, Chris, being able to delegate, yeah, priceless.
All right, DataNauts listeners, it's time to do my favorite section. We're going to bust some silos. Woo-hoo. And talk about future learning. Quite frankly, we're all in this to become, I think, better at IT, better at our skills, you know, improve our careers, do less work, get paid more money, all that kind of jazz. So the first question is around a topic. We tickled it a little bit earlier, but I want to flesh it out a little bit further. The thought that infrastructure people like myself, do we need to become developers? I hear this quite a bit. Oh, you got to become a developer. The day of the infrastructure guy, gal that pulls the nerd knob is over. I'm not quite so sure. Do we need to become developers? That's the first question. What is the barrier for adoption is the second question, specifically for PowerShell.
No, I don't think you have to be a developer to use PowerShell. I do think that, well, you need to learn some core concepts like how to do an if statement and how to do a loop, you know, like a for each and things like that. PowerShell makes that really, really simple. I still find it to be one of the absolute simplest languages for doing things like that. And the interesting thing is like that kind of component of development, it transfers, right? It doesn't matter what you're writing. Like if you've been writing stuff in, writing bash scripts, you're still doing loops, you're still doing checks and if statements and things like that. So it's exactly the same idea. That is probably the most like development that you really need to understand. And I also would say that the other barrier for adoption is just taking time to read what other people have done and see how they have accomplished tasks. Do a search, try to find if someone else has solved the issue or if they got close, look and read. And PowerShell, as opposed to most of the other languages out there, actually, I'd say probably all of them, is the easiest, most like normal language that you could ask for, right? It's very straightforward. You read it and you know exactly what's going on in almost every instance. Unless, of course, somebody is using a bunch of asinine aliases and trying to be cute and clever. But most people, I don't see being that way. Like they try to write in plain commandlet English text, and that makes it really easy to follow what's going on. So low barrier, in my opinion.
Alan, let me ask you a kind of a different question. Do you think scripting languages are mainstream at this point? I mean, every admin and engineer is likely to be using a scripting language based on your interaction with customers. And if it's not yet, how far away are we from that?
Good question. Are they using them or should they be using them? Should they? Yes, they should be. Are they? You still get the people that don't, you know, that are scared. The people that think they're going to wreck their entire environment. And, you know, those people need to learn that PowerShell has some great safeguards. PowerShell will not allow you to kill your environment without warning you that you're going to do it first. You have to be pretty damn good at scripting to delete everything in your environment using PowerShell and remove all the safeguards that are needed. So it's a good question. You know, I certainly see, as I see resumes go through the internet, as I see stuff come up, job opportunities get pushed around, PowerShell and scripting is certainly on the list of things that people are expecting nowadays from their admin. I would say if you have it, then you're definitely more than likely to get the job from the guy that doesn't have it. So learn it.
Mm-hmm. And then kind of a broad idea here, something I was thinking about as I'm working with more and more next generation architecture, is infrastructure just going to reach a point where it's kind of smart enough that we don't need to script and that scripting just becomes ultimately obsolete?
No.
Expand on that, please.
I have definitely seen the maturation of a wide range of products that have come to market that allow you to do things in a very smart way that can look at in a software-defined manner and see the behavior and what's going on and be able to go in and execute the changes and be very dynamic with the environment and understand everything that's going on and really take a lot of workload off as an administrator or an architect. However, the fact of the matter is that the tooling that comes around these and the reporting information and the ability to understand what's happened and how frequently and where it happened, all of those components continue to be challenging and continue to be difficult. And as such, I still think we're going to see a great deal of scripting. For instance, if you have an environment where even if it's policy-based, if something changes and it affects 20 different policies, you're not likely to have a policy for changing 20 different policies, right? So unless the tooling provides you the opportunity to make the modification to those policies that are where the intelligence is and where that structure resides, you still need a mechanism for making that change against those 20 policies quickly and easily. And the same with reporting on those 20 policies. So let's say, you know, we start at 20, but let's say we've got hundreds of policies and we need to identify how many of our policies are tied to HIPAA compliance and pulling information about, you know, how many vMotions did we have between data stores that are, you know, HIPAA compliant and non-HIPAA compliant, right? The granular need there will almost always facilitate a need to script or to reach into an API to get information or into the database. And it's not always going to be built in the tooling. So I think scripting is going to continue. I don't think it's going to go away. I think what we script may change to some degree and what we target, but we're always going to have a need for some level of scripting from an automation standpoint.
Yes, I somewhat agree with that. And also, I think we're also starting to see the next evolution as well. So, you know, we're starting to see things layered on top of scripting languages and on top of other languages that do add yet another abstraction to make it a lot easier to automate your infrastructure yet again. So things like configuration management tools, desired state configuration. There's some companies out there like Puppet and Chef and Salt and Ansible that are coming up with even more of a plain language that you can use to describe what your infrastructure looks like. and then allow the code underneath to actually go and create that infrastructure for you. Your question was, you know, is the infrastructure ever going to get smart enough to so you don't need to learn to script? I don't think it'll ever get to that point, because it comes back down to the initial use case. And, you know, I'm a PM, so I talk about use cases all the time. You never find two use cases that are the same, or very rarely do you. You know, you may have two banks that are trying to achieve something similar, but they'll have a completely different way that they do it. You may have, you know, two different companies that do things completely different ways. And it's those different ways that you need to encounter for, and that you need to put into your business logic and therefore into your scripts and your environment.
All right, guys. So let's say I'm convinced I want to start using PowerShell. Can you recommend some resources where I can go to find out more about PowerShell, maybe communities that would be good to get involved with?
Absolutely. The first one I would recommend is PowerShell.org. That has become a really great place for people to go out and communicate with folks. They also have a Slack channel that you can get on, you know, a group and talk with folks. I'm on there as well.
Slack, the new IRC.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, the funny thing is they have an IRC bridge to the old PowerShell IRC. So within Slack, you can be on IRC and still communicate, have the same conversation, I guess. You know, that's a big one. You know, from a literature standpoint, I'll plug, you know, the Mastering vSphere 6 book if you want a good intro into how to use Power CLI. There's some information there. And if you're looking at like PowerShell DSC, the DevOps for VMware Administrators book has a nice intro on that.
Yeah, I'd say that, you know, there's communities for a lot of these different things. We have a specific community for Power CLI, which is vmware.com/go/PowerCLI. You can get straight to the communities and start talking to people about looking at scripts, looking at what people have done. To be honest with you, when people say to me, how do I get started? What I tell them is find a reason. Get that one task that you want to do that you're fed up of doing in your day job. Sit down and script it. Go through the pain of learning how to do that one task. Because once you've been through that pain, you'll end up with so much more knowledge and your next task will be so much more easy. And, you know, use the resources that Josh just said. Use the Slack channel to help you work out that first script. But make sure you have that reason to learn it. Because if you're just going to sit down and go, I want to learn Power CLI because it sounds cool, you never will. If you have that one reason to do it, then you'll actually achieve something. You'll be proud of yourself and you'll keep going.
Yeah, and the best part about that is the community around PowerShell is really, really strong. Yeah. You know, whether you throw it out on Twitter or throw it in the VMTN community for Power CLI, throw it in Slack, wherever. If you're showing people that you're legitimately trying to learn how to do something and not just going out and say, hey, can somebody write a script for me that does XYZ? You know, you get a few of those, right? But most people legitimately said, hey, you know, I pulled this script from Luke Deacon's website. I need to change it just a little bit for my environment because let's say I've got something slightly different. And it isn't quite working. And I'm not sure. Will you look at my code and can somebody tell me what I'm missing? More often than not, even Luke will be the one that'll jump in and say, oh, you know, here's the change that you need to make, or somebody else will see it. The community is phenomenal. I have been probably a huge consumer. I know I'm credited with being a contributor, but I would say I consume so much more than what I've contributed from the PowerShell community.
There are no stupid questions with the PowerShell community. Everybody understands that everybody was a beginner once. They are so nice that you can ask stupid questions and they'll be like, yeah, no, don't worry about it. Here's how it works.
Yeah, except for, can I get this to run on my Mac?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Not nice at all. Now, Josh, you're pretty active socially. Can you tell folks how they can follow you? You got a blog, a Twitter handle that you want to plug?
Yeah, I can be followed on Twitter at your own risk. It's @Josh_Atwell. The underscore is there because it's really important. Otherwise, it just reads really odd. And I blog at vtesseract.com. So think of the Tesseract from the Marvel Universe, add a V to the front. So it's vtesseract.com.
Same question for you, Alan.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter as Alan Renouf, AlanRenouf. And my blog is virtual.net, virtu-al.net.
All right, all you snazzy listeners, that's it for today's show of the Datanauts podcast. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us. I certainly learned a lot, and hopefully we'll get Ethan on a Windows machine here soon, cranking out some PowerShell. Speaking of Ethan, you can reach him. He's at EC Banks on the Twitters or his blog, ethancbanks.com. And I'm Chris. I'm at Chris Wall on Twitter. And my blog is wallnetwork.com. For more superb Datanauts content, you know what to do. Do that crab walk. Head on over to packetpushers.net and partake on that bountiful feast of podcast goodness. Until then, may your server lights blink, your storage spindle spin, and your cables, let them be cleanly managed.
PowerShell in the house.
And we're out. Josh is sexy. There we go.
Yeah.
Take away there. And we know it.